stone. I just don't know where I can go. Fun's getting low. Winter is a coming back, and colder than the last. Pity for me, cold it can be when breezes blow with ice and snow. No wonder then I sing time and again.
This is Sparky on Ice. Welcome to the coldest podcast on the internet. Well, let's just start from the beginning. My name is Robert Ray, and I am an electrician working in Antarctica. And this show is about daily life in Antarctica, how we survive, obstacles we have to overcome, and things we have to deal with, working with the extreme cold and the wind and the snow and ice. And, you know, some of it's going to be my journey here. The first few episodes are probably going to be me going over how I got here and the trip and my point up to now. I've been here a little over 2 months, and I thought maybe people wanted to hear what I had to say about this place. So I'm just going to get started. So in order to do this properly, I have to start out with a little bit of history on me. And when I was a teenager, I had a severe knee injury. My knee popped off to the side, and it was very, very painful and traumatic. Well, thanks to that thing, that injury, it kept doing that for many, many years. And it caused me a lot of issues, and changed a lot of things about my plans. I was no longer able to fulfill my duty to the military, so that was done. There were just certain things I can't do, and one of those is, oddly enough, walking on ice and slick surfaces. I avoided them forever, and weirdly enough, I'm here. And we'll get back into that later. Luckily, a couple years ago, almost 2 years, well, a year and a half now, I had surgery to fix this problem, and the doctor had said that I would have no problems, and it would take a serious injury for my knee to come out again. But, you know, I've dealt with this for 20 years, and it's one of those things that I have to think about every day. And like I said, we'll cover some of that later. So I'm going to fast forward a few years here. I worked for a major company on the western coast as a maintenance electrician, and decided to move to Montana. Well, there was a problem with that. I spent 10 years in maintenance and had trouble finding a job in my field. Construction was just something that would be difficult to get back into, considering I'd been out of it for 10 years. I wasn't as young as I used to be. And so there was that. So I was just looking for a job. And then one day back in late October, I got a phone call. And there's this guy on the end of the line. And he says, he asked me, how would you feel about working in Antarctica? And I said, well, that sounds very interesting, but I got to think about it. You know, that's a pretty tough deal. He talked to me for a few minutes about it. And after a few days, Amy and I decided that maybe we'd take a shot. I mean, what's the worst thing can happen? I go to Antarctica and make some money. That's decent money. So I called him back, and I put in my application. Next thing I know, I'm talking to a recruiter for the company that I currently work for. And then I'm talking to a hiring manager, and they're talking about all these things I have to deal with and go through in order to qualify to get down here. And I'm like, yeah, let's go for it. So there's that. And then, so basically I get a contract, and they're like, okay, you have to physically qualify now. I'm like, wow, what does all this mean? And what it means is I have to be basically not going to die and not need emergency evacuation while I'm down here, aside from accidents. So I'm like, okay. Cool. I have to go through all these tests, and even the doctor said a couple of them are now useless. They don't do them anymore on a regular basis. And just sad that we have to go through some of these, but we have to. The hardest part was the dental. As many of you may have known, if you knew me previously, you knew I'd broken my teeth many, many years ago, thanks to my knee. So another knee issue there. I'd fallen and hit in the tub, broke my front front four teeth and the bottom two teeth. I never had the money to get them fixed, so that was another deal. Then I was like, well, I got to get these teeth fixed because I can't go with dental issues. So here we go. Go to the dentist. And they were like, wow, okay, we're on a short time frame. Let's get this done. I had 10 teeth pulled in one day, and I had dentures made so I could get down here on time. When I get back, we're going to do some more permanent work. But right now, I wear dentures as part of that. I had all my wisdom teeth pulled at the same time. So 10 teeth, one day, not a fun day for anybody. But, you know, you do what you got to do. And then that was it. I had fulfilled my part of the bargain. I'd got my PQ. I'd qualified. And so I waited for the few weeks that it takes for the medical team to decide whether you're fit to serve or not. And then I got an email back one day in early January, and they said, you're fit to go. We've approved you. And then a few hours later, the recruiter calls me and says, did you get your PQ yet? And I was like, yeah, I just got it. He's like, okay, we're going to rewrite your contract. We'd like you to go next week. So here I am. I've got a week to prep for an Antarctic trip of at least 4 months. Because I've got a contract through April. And I'm like, wow, I've got a lot of stuff to do. I've got a lot of stuff to buy. So we went out shopping. We'd done some prep before. So around Christmas time, we went and bought stuff that was on sale. Because we were pretty sure I was going. And we'd made some preparations. It was real now. I was going. I was leaving in a week. And so we had to really get some stuff done. Did a lot of prep work around the house, did some repairs, did some building that needed to get done. And then it was time to go. And that was the day that it was time to go. And I think that was a difficult day for everyone involved. It was a lot of hugging, a lot of crying, and a lot of excitement. So, I left my hometown in Montana, and I got on a plane. And I hadn't been on a plane in, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. Been a long, long time. And it was interesting. It was a small plane. It got me to Denver. Never been to Denver. The airport was nice, just a fly through. And then I hit San Francisco, which was fine. Yeah, just an airport again. But I had like a 6 hour, no, it was like an 8 hour delay in San Francisco. I forgot exactly how long it was. But luckily, when I went to check in, they gave me the option of changing my seat, which was good because then I had an aisle seat on the bulkhead, which was really nice because I really liked having a lot of room and wasn't sure if I could deal with being in a middle seat for the next 13 hours for my flight over to Auckland. So get on the flight. I don't know. It's like 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock or something like that. And it was really cool because I'd never been on a plane this size. We flew over on a 777. And I'd never been on an international flight or a outside the nation carrier, right? So it was really cool because it was a Kiwi New Zealand flight. And so everybody had their own little TV and remote control and headphones. They were all provided for free, which I'm like, wow, this is free. Drinks were free. Well, regular drinks. You can buy the alcohol. And then suddenly they're like, what would you like to eat? And I'm like, we give food too? Well, that is awesome. So dinner was, I want to say it was like a spaghetti or a lasagna or something like that. Pretty good. And then tried to sleep. Stayed up for a while and watched a couple of videos. And then early in the morning, we're awoken to, what would you like for breakfast? I'm like, breakfast? Wow, we get breakfast too. I don't know who came up with this idea, but warm tomatoes for breakfast? Not a good idea in New Zealand. I don't know where you got that idea, but no. Just no. But it's in there. Anyway, so I fly into Auckland. So go through customs. It's not as bad as people say it is going through customs. It's really not. They ask you questions and they stamp your passport. I don't see what the problem is. And then down to Christchurch. Christchurch is an interesting little town. It went through an earthquake, almost a decade ago. And they're still rebuilding from that big earthquake. It was a big deal. Things are still broken. There's a big cathedral downtown that is broken. And I didn't realize what the problem was until like my second day there. And I was like, oh, now I understand why it's broken. So I get in Christchurch, get to the hotel, meet some wonderful people that are also going to Antarctica. Met one on the plane because I happened to hear him mention that he's going to Antarctica. And this is my friend Matt. And I called him, I yelled at him and said, hey, you're going to Antarctica, I am too. He's like, cool, stick with me, we'll figure it out. Because he'd never gone before. So there's, I don't know, about 9 of us in this one trip. So we all get in the shuttles, we go to our hotels. It's a nice little hotel, single room with a shower, just one bed, little TV, just perfect. Absolutely perfect for what we need. We're only going to be there a couple days. Next day, we go to the polar activities place. I forgot the name of it. But anyway, this is where they issue you your gear, give you your safety briefing, talk about the plane, all this other stuff. So this gear, oh man, is it something else. So you got this ginormous red coat, and it is huge and heavy, but it is super warm. We've tried all this stuff on. We got Carhartt bibs or wind pants and these ugly, ugly white boots. They call bunny boots. The worst things I've ever worn in my life. They're uncomfortable. They don't fit exactly right, even though it's your size. And, you try everything on, make sure everything works. And then you go back to your room and you wait for your plane. And we were supposed to fly out, like, the next day. And that night, we get a notice on our from the hotel that due to weather, they had delayed the flight by a day. So I'm like, great, this is wonderful. I'm running out of money because we didn't have a lot of money to start with, and now I'm stuck in Christchurch. So, just make the best of it. We went to they have a big old arboretum down there. So we all took a trip down there, and it's free. So it was really cool that got to see a lot of plants and stuff I would have never seen before. And then that night, we were planning on, we had made plans. We were going to take we were going to get an Uber, and a bunch of us were going to go to the beach. And then that night, we got the call that the plane had been scheduled for the next day. So we're like, okay, that's it. Let's get all packed up and ready to go. So we packed our stuff up. One of the guys had a portable scale because you can only bring over 85 pounds of stuff on the plane. Yeah, that's tough. Packing everything you need in 85 pounds, it's including your ECW gear, by the way. That's tough. So next morning, bright and early, shuttle shows up. Didn't really have time for breakfast. We were told there might be food there, so I was like, okay, I'll wait for that. And turns out the nearest food was a decent walk away, and I just all I had on were my bunny boots, and I was not walking away over there with my bunny boots. So I just sat there and waited. And get in line, get weighed, get your stuff weighed, get your tags. And then you go out to a bus, nice little bus. It's like it's not like a Trailways bus. It's more like an airport shuttle bus. You get on there, and you drive out to the landing strip, where sits this impressive looking airplane. It's an LC-130 Hercules. And I'd seen them in air shows, but I'd never really been around them when they were on. Holy crap, is this thing loud. So we get on this We line up, get on this plane. We're carrying all this gear. We're allowed to carry on, and, you know, had to fit in, basically it's carry on size stuff. So all we have is our bag of our ECW gear and a carry on. And all our other gear is packed up and palletized. It's in the plane with us, but it's palletized. So we get in, and they start, and we're packed in like sardines. And here's the problem with the LC-130. You don't get a real seat. You get to sit on a net. If you've never sat in a C-130 net, it is not the most comfortable ride in the world. Even wearing ECW padding and gear, right? And then we sat there for a good 2 hours, at least 2 hours, waiting to take off. I don't know what was going on, but we sat and sat and sat in this plane. And then they would move a little bit, and then they'd sit. They'd move a little bit, and then they'd sit. And then finally, we got on the real runway, and we took off. This thing is so loud, there's no one, you can't talk to the person beside you. You can't, there's no way to communicate. You're wearing earplugs. So you're basically in amongst 30 other people that you can't communicate with. You can if you yell, but who wants to yell for 8 hours because of how long the flight is? So you play games, you sleep, you contemplate how the universe began. You just pass the time because you got 8 hours. And then comes towards the end of the flight, and you know it's starting to get cold. And because you can see the ice forming on the window. You look out the window because you have a porthole window, not a real window. And it's behind you, so you have to get up and turn around. But there, you know, several thousand feet below you was this field of ice. And you're like, oh, we're here. We're in Antarctica. There's all this ice. And I took some pictures, and it was amazing. And then they say, get ready for landing. And everybody's putting their ECW gear back on, getting their boots and everything laced up and ready to go. And I'm worried. I'm really worried because the ice. And as I said earlier about my knee, I'm seriously concerned because I've never been on this much ice before. Here's the good thing. It's not really, I mean, it is ice, but it's not the same ice that we're used to. And yes, we do have frozen water, but that's not what this is. This is literally ice crystals that have fallen. And on the tarmac, they're just packed down so that you can land with sleds. So my fears were a little unwarranted, but you know, it is still a little slippery. It's snow. So I'm very careful. I'm walking out. And then we see this thing. And on the side, it says Ivan the Terabus. And Ivan the Terabus is this transport thing. It has wheels that are taller than me and about 4 feet wide. I mean, this thing is massive. It is so huge. I'm like, how can the ice support this thing? Turns out we're on 70 feet of ice out on this runway. We're actually out on the Ross ice shelf when we land. I didn't know this at the time. And so we board this Ivan and Tara bus. You need to look it up. I got some pictures up of it on the website. And it's an amazing thing. And you're riding along. You're talking to people that are on your way. There was Matt, the friend that I mentioned earlier. And there was some Kiwi folks. And we were talking about, you know, our accents and all this other stuff. That, you know, it was just meaningless banter, basically, trying to get to know people. And so we're riding along on this ice shelf for, I don't know, a good 30, 40 minutes. And then we see the Rock, which is Ross Island, which is where McMurdo Station is. The first thing we see is this big bunch of green buildings. And that is Scott Base, which is the New Zealand base. And this giant, just huge hill that we have to go up. And I'm like, how is this thing going to go up this hill? And it's this big brown hill, and there's ice everywhere. So it goes up this hill and goes over what we call Arrival Heights. And there is McMurdo Station, which when you look at it, you're like, this place looks like it's been built piece by piece over the last 60 years. And in fact, it has. Every building was built during a certain decade, apparently, because that's how they built the station. A little bit of a time. But you come over, and not only do you see McMurdo Station, but you see the continent of Antarctica. And this is the, people talk about awe-inspiring sights. And, you know, this is a nice, clear, sunny day. And to see those mountains, like Mount Discovery, and things like that. I've seen mountains all my life. I've lived in mountains all my life. There's nothing that compares to the mountains of Antarctica in any shape or form. You just can't. It is indescribably amazingly beautiful to look at because you've got, at the time, the sea ice was still here. So it looked like this vast sea of ice and this huge bunch of mountains. And I mean, just as far as the eye could see in both directions, mountains. That is Antarctica. That is my first view of this amazing continent. And then they took us out of Ivan, took us over to the chalet for our orientation. And then that was fun and interesting. Learned a lot. And then it was time for to go to our room and grab something to eat. Now, dinners here are pretty good. I was anticipating decent food because all we'd had during the flight over were sandwiches and chips and, you know, nothing really substantial. I get there, and it's like 8 o'clock. Well, the galley closes at 7. So all that's left is pizza. So my first dinner in Antarctica was pizza. Not a bad pizza. It was okay. Better than school pizza, but it certainly wasn't, you know, DiGiorno. Yeah, I know DiGiorno. But it's handmade pizza, so it's pretty good. And then I go to my room, which is shared with two other guys, and that's the end of my day. I'm exhausted. I don't even feel like I'm packing. I just put my bed together and go to sleep. And that's where I'm going to end this first episode, is by ending on my first day in Antarctica. If you have questions, you can give me a voicemail on the Anchor app, which is where I'm hosting this podcast, or you can email me at podcast@sparkyonice.xyz. You can check my website out, sparkyonice.xyz, and the YouTube channel, where I will be posting YouTube stuff occasionally, Sparky on Ice. And I'll see you guys next time.